We're into hour number two. What's going on? Welcome to the program. My name is Jim Rome, and I busted out. We are not in our studio today. We are live at Torrey Pines for the Farmers Insurance Open. It is a beautiful day. Had a great first hour. We had Tony Finau. We had Charlie Hoffman. And we start hour number two. Let me remind you, normally I'm in the Quicken Loans studios. Quicken Loans apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Now, if you know golf, you know this guy. If you know him, you know what he's about. But a lot of you did not until he did our podcast. And when I had an opportunity to bring Pat Perez onto this show, I knew I had to do it. Pat, dude, it is so good to see you, man. How you feeling?
I feel great. How you doing?
Doing great. Now, listen, you're a pro. Pro's pro. I say this respectfully. But the reason I have so much respect for you is because, and the clones, the reason they love you is because you let it rip. I want to remind you, this is not your show. This is not my podcast. You and I got to be on our best behavior. It's terrestrial radio. No F-bombs, nothing like that.
That's going to be tough for me. You know?
I was going to say, you're going to be all right.
It'll be tough. I can do it, though.
I think so. You're going to be all right. Pat Perez joining me. All right, so here we are at Torrey Pines. Now, I had Charlie Hoffman on the program. And we were talking about what it's like to be from the San Diego area and playing this tournament. He's from Poway. You're from Torrey Pines. Hi. What's it like for you to come back and play this track and play in this tournament?
Amazing. You know, I've been playing against Charlie since we were 8 years old. So, you know, unfortunately, I've seen him get uglier and uglier every day. But we love coming back here. This is our favorite event. I mean, you know, the crowd, the town, everything's just amazing. The tournament, Farmers, the whole tournament's amazing. You know, this is definitely my fifth major. I mean, I'm sure Charlie said the same thing.
Pat Perez, my guest. Now, more specifically, this is the course that you used to work at when you were a teenager. You take the bus over from Cardiff. It's the course where you said that you were, quote, wiping down carts or kissing ass to another foursome for some extra cash.
That's it.
All right, so, I mean, that's it. So does it feel completely normal that you're now here teeing it up in PGA Tour events? Or on some levels, this thing kind of still a little bit surreal?
Nah, it's kind of both. You know, I've been doing it so long now. It's my 18th year, so I'm more used to it. But when I come back here, I always have the memories of what I used to do. And, you know, of course, I don't know if I told you on the podcast, but when I got my card the first time, it was with the first year they changed the course. So I knew every blade of grass.
You did not tell that story. Go ahead.
I knew every blade of grass. I knew every slow. I knew everything. I knew every break of the green. And, of course, the first year I get my card in 02, they changed the course.
Change up on you.
And now I'm like, I got out of here. I go, what the hell happened here? I mean, I knew everything. And all of a sudden now there's like 800 more yards and the course is hard. I go, oh boy, this is going to be tough. But no, I have so many great memories being here. And, you know, it's so awesome to come back here.
Pat Perez joining me here at Torrey Pines. One more detail from back in the day. When you were caddying, John Daly handed you his Cobra Ultra Mid with the red titanium shaft and the Kevlar face. What was it like getting your hands on that thing for the first time? And then how does that compare to the clubs that you're swinging right now?
Oh, it couldn't be any more different. You know, I caddied for a guy that was in John's group, and it was in 92, and he just won, obviously, the PGA there. And, you know, it was unbelievable. John was the biggest thing going in the game right now at that time, and it was so cool to be in his group. And someone said, hey, this guy swings like you, and he hits it like you. He goes, all right, well, let me see it. So, you know, we get on number 8 on there in the north, and he goes, all right, I want to see it. I've heard about it. I want to see it. And he, you know, he was about 20 yards behind me, and I, you know, off the tee,
right.
And then I hit, and I was just past him off the tee. So it was unbelievable. John's been like a brother ever since I got out here, and it's to go back to think that when I met him when I was 15 and then get on tour and be able to hang out with him is so amazing.
Pat, give me a good JD story, one that you can tell on this show.
I can't tell on this show. There's none.
None? No. None?
I had lunch with John one day.
That's a great story, bro. That's an amazing story.
There's none other that I can tell you.
Are there no stories that you can clean up on this show about JD? I mean, if it's not there, don't force it. But
no, there's plenty there. I remember waking up. I always used to have a party at my house, and I woke up. I actually didn't wake up. I rolled over on my bed, and he was just to the right of me right here. And he had an empty bottle of Crown, a handle of the Crown, at like 5:30 in the morning. And I looked at him, I said, John, what the hell are you doing? You know, Bubba, you know, I got to play that Pro-Am at 7:20. I said, you might want to get in your Hummer and get out of here. His Hummer was parked on my rock, almost knocked over my cactus. It was parked sideways in my yard.
Incredible.
This guy's incredible. I mean, I got a million stories, unfortunately, that I can't really tell. But
so you can come back on the podcast.
Yes.
Or I'll go on your show.
We'll do some on that.
We'll do it.
We'll do that.
Listen, if golf is the hardest thing in the world, what's golfing hungover like? How hard is that?
The worst. I used to do it all the time. I can't do it anymore. I just literally can't do it anymore. It's, you know, at 40, I'll be 43 in a month. It's impossible to do it now. Can't do it.
You know, Pat, it used to be like, and I'm older than you, it used to be that when you got after it, it was always worth it. No matter what. Everything's worth it. No matter what, it's worth it. No matter what, it is worth it. Now it's never worth it.
It's never worth
it.
What
happened to us?
Especially now with a screaming baby.
Worth it.
Yeah, now that I got a screaming baby that's up at 11:30, 1, 3:30, and 5, trying to get smashed. I mean, I try to get smashed between like 2 and 7 now in the afternoon.
You got to schedule it.
Yeah, so then I can put her to bed, and I actually get like 5 hours of sleep before I'm up all night. So that, yeah, that's all changed. But no, it's never worth it anymore to do it.
Pat Perez joining us. Now, something else about back in the day, when you came here, you used to roll up in tournaments with clubs that did not fit wearing high-top Reeboks. How would you describe that look back in the day? And tell me you were going with the pumps. Back in the day.
No, it Reebok was the, pumps. I couldn't afford the pumps. It was that Reebok. It looked like a women's shoe, but it wasn't. It was the Reebok high top. I can't remember what the hell it was called, but I had those, and, you know, I had this, I had a company called Montecito that was, you know, giving me a discount on clothes, and I was able to wear those during Junior World when I won, but no, we didn't have a whole lot. I got a lot of my stuff from here at Torrey, and when I won Junior World, I had a friend, Mike Padilla. He had these beautiful, brilliant ping clubs that he let me use, and when I won, he gave them to me. You know, I couldn't afford the grips on them, but that was pretty cool.
You know, we talked about this on the podcast. You grew up with Charlie Hoffman, but you grew up with Tiger as well. I mean, yeah. You've known him a long, long time.
Yeah.
You guys played the junior circuit together, and then you beat him down. You beat him by 8 strokes.
The last
at
time
Torrey.
It's happened.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. You won the junior world title in 93 when you were a senior in high school. You beat him by 8 strokes. What do you remember about that day, and how did that feel?
I remember, you know, I wasn't really worried about him because he was so far back, believe it or not. I've never been able to say that, but that was the one day where he was behind me. And, of course, you know, Tiger was he was so unbelievable. I played against him. We talk about it all the time, you know, at Presidio Hills, and then we went to Mission Trails, and then we went to Balboa, and then we went to, you know, and then we came here. And he was going for his 8th title, and he was the guy of the guy in junior world. I mean, it was no question about it. But I had played this course so many times. I played it every day in the summer until the tournament came. So I knew everything I was going to do, and I couldn't have been any more prepared to play it. So I think I had a little more of an advantage there, even though he was the best. But that was incredible. I saw Tiger yesterday. I talked for about 20 minutes. He looks phenomenal.
Uh-huh. What do you make of where he was a year ago and where he is right now?
Incredible.
And did you see that happening? I mean, this is a different cat now. I understand that.
And I said that. I was in Singapore a year ago when I said, they interviewed me. I said, what do you think about Tiger? I said, you know, guys, I said, he looks phenomenal. He's got the speed. He looks like he can swing. He's not in pain. I said, the biggest thing, he's not in pain. What I think would happen to him with his back surgeries is he had all these surgeries and the guys missed. And then finally the last one, when they fused it, they got it right. You know, the mental part of him has always been the strongest of anybody I've ever seen. So that was not the question. When you physically can't do it, I might pull out last week from a hangnail. You know, I mean, that's how much puts
right.
I am. You know, but this guy, you know, he had all these back surgeries, knee surgeries, you know, he just couldn't physically do it. So they asked me, I said, what do you think? I said, with his speed and with his knowledge of the game and everything, I said, there's two things going to happen. It's exactly a year ago. I said, he's going to make the Ryder Cup team, and he's going to win a tournament. And both things happen. And after that,
All right, so you called that perfectly. What do you think is going to happen to him this year? If you've got to make another prediction for that guy this year, what would it be?
Well, there's two major courses I think he's really going to do well on this year, which is obviously Augusta, which he's won 4 times. And I actually think he's going to win at Pebble because he owns Pebble. And he's going to be healthy. He knows how to play his Open there because he won by 15. You know, I see the same kind of thing happening. I've called him to win 2 majors, and those are the two. I think he's going to win the Masters and the U.S. Open.
Pat Perez joining me live. We're at Torrey Pines. In fact, you and I talked about this on the pod, but I think it's important enough to reset right here. This is one of my favorite parts of our conversation. Look, I'm not a fanboy. I don't play favorites. They pay me not to play favorites. That said, Anthony Kim is one of my favorite athletes ever. Not one of my favorite golfers, one of my favorite athletes. Not one of my favorite athletes, one of my favorite people. He's golf's most mysterious dude.
Yes,
he explodes on the scene. He runs red hot, and then he disappears, seemingly never to be seen or ever heard from before. What was your relationship with him like? And what was he like as a dude and a player back in the day?
Player-wise, he was unbelievable. He was one of the best I've ever seen. I think he would have been still the top probably guy under 35 right now. In my opinion, I think he would have won some majors. I think he'd be right there with Rory, you know, having close to 4 majors. I think he would have been amazing. You know, you saw how he was at the Ryder Cup. That's just the way he was. You know, the guy's been over on his own here since he was 16. You know, but he's, like you said, he's hot. He doesn't listen to anybody. He kind of does his own thing. And
does that sound familiar, Pat?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
But, no, I got along with Anthony great, and then we got into some heat one day, and we got into a fight, and then it was all good. It's like, I don't know, it's like a mutual respect after that. Maybe like because somebody actually stood up to him, which is why maybe he still talks to me. But
how'd the fight start? What were you guys doing?
We were just jawing on the putting green. We had we were jawing, and then the jawing got a little bit more somehow.
You got personal, probably.
Yeah, I got personal, and then there was some... You know, there was some race thrown in there, back and forth a little bit, which I wouldn't really appreciate. But, you know, there was some other stuff in there.
He threw some race at you?
It was both. Yeah, it was that. He threw it at me, and then it was like, you know.
And then your moms were brought up.
Yeah, and then that was brought up. And, it got hot. This is all 5 minutes before I'm getting ready to tee off at Colonial. And this is like where we're at. I go, man, this little bastard. And then.
Did you give my dude the hands?
No, no. And then later on, we talked about it. We got, and we're cool. We've been cool for about 5 years now. It's been awesome. I talk to him all the time.
Pat Perez joining us. So what's he doing? If you talk to him all the time, what is that guy up to?
He's not doing anything. He's got like 7 dogs now. He built a new house in Dallas. He's just hanging out. He's chilling. He's a dog guy. Yeah, he's got like, he says he's got a drink. He's got some medical sales, medical stuff doing. He's got some stuff in career going. He says he's doing unbelievable. He's like, you couldn't pay me to come back to the tour.
Wow. So he's good. He's fine.
He wants nothing to do with it. Doesn't care.
He's got his dogs. He's got his dough. He's fine.
Doesn't care.
Now, when you talk about adversity and physical things, a lot of people thought your career might be over back in 2016.
Me too.
When you had that torn labrum, what did it teach you being away from the game? What did you learn about yourself and the sport?
Well, I learned a lot about, not really about myself. It was, you know, I had full stress when I came back because I only had 15 starts. So, you know, like I told you in the podcast, Callaway dropped me, so now, but at least they dropped me early enough that where I could get some new stuff. So I called up my boy TaylorMade and Titleist, and then I called up Matt Rollins to get some get a set of PXGs, and you know, I got all those, and we hit them all, and you know, then Callaway came back with some little offer, and my caddy goes, you know, you're out of your mind. He goes, your equipment is so much better. You're so much better with this stuff. You're out of your mind if you go back for that little number and use the stuff on the fourth quarter. You only got 15 starts. And I wind up, you know, making $1.6 million in those 4 starts and winning. And, you know, and then I get on PXG staff, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. The whole thing that's happened the last 2.5 years, I can't even get over. I would have never been able to think that in March 8th when I had surgery, coming out of there, sleeping in a sling on the couch for a month, and then going to Malaysia, I got a spot from Todd Reinhardt, which, you know, the funny thing is if I hadn't gotten that start, I don't know if I would have started that year. I wouldn't have started there. I might have waited till Sony, which would then cost me a win and all that cash. A 2-year exemption, all that kind of stuff. The whole way it played out, I can't even describe it because I didn't really think about it at the time. But I think about it now. But, no, I did not think coming out of that surgery that this was all going to happen.
So how did you do that? How did that thing
just hard
go
work.
Your way?
You know, when I started swinging, I could really only swing one way. Because to protect my shoulder, I had to take all the impact out. I used to be a real deep digger in the ground and that kind of stuff. Now I'm trying to hit more up on it to take the pressure off my shoulder and my elbow because I can't go down after it. I don't want to screw up that shoulder again. So, miraculously, I started hitting it kind of higher and not as far, but straighter. And then my short game got better, and I just worked on my putting a lot. And, you know, to go from surgery March 8th to never know if you're going to swing a golf club again and then win in November
and
then have a happy Christmas is like,
that's
I would
incredible.
Never, ever even thought that could be done in 1 year.
Pat Perez, my guest, and you're repping G-Rod on your shirt this week. For those who do not know, who was Greg and what kind of an impact did he have on you in your life?
Yeah, my boy Greg Rodriguez, he killed himself this year, or last year. You know, I've known Greg so long, about 30 years now, and you know, he was part of the crew. He was our crew when he came out. Every time we hung out with him, we saw him at the track. We always hung out with him. He was, you know, one of my brother's best friends, and you know, he got on the piss one night and he just had enough. You know, but there was kind of some signs earlier that, you know, he kind of mentioned it, but you know, nobody ever thought really anything serious of it. But he did. He took a shotgun and blew his head off, and I got the call from my boy Chris, and I was like, you gotta be kidding me, man. That's it was tragic. You know, it was tragic, and his family was devastated, and all of his friends and everything. It's unbelievable. You know, you see all these celebrities and all these things killing stuff, but it doesn't really hit you until one of these guys hits you and they're your people. I mean, you know, the only thing I can tell you is anybody out there that if you ever even see a sign, if you ever hear of anybody say, oh, I'm off myself or anything, take it seriously, because I've never said that, and none of my other friends have said that. He mentioned a couple of times, we didn't think anything of it. And then he gets so drunk. I mean, you know, his BAC was 0.34. Mm. You know, so, you know, all I can tell you is if anybody's got problems out there, that is not the answer. It just is not the answer. It is not that bad to where you got to take it. Because for me, it's the most selfish act you can make. Because now you've left it on your parents, your siblings, could be a wife, could be your kids, could be anything. It's just the impact of it is something that they don't understand because they're gone. But the impact for the family and the friends is amazing. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to profess to know what he or anybody else in that situation is going through. I mean, obviously in a really bad way, if you're doing that.
Yeah.
Obviously a really, really bad way. I would imagine that when you look at something like that, that's something probably you, the family, you never really get over. You just hope to get beyond or get
through,
right?
Yeah, you hope to get beyond. I can tell us if anybody's got that problem, please call somebody. Just call a family. Because anybody, if you go to somebody... If you have any real people in your life and you go to them with a real problem, they will stop everything they're doing at that minute and try to help you.
You bet.
Guaranteed. So please Don't take that action. Call somebody. Get help. There's all kinds of stuff out there. That is not the end that anybody needs to go through. And it's really sad. And we miss Greggy. And, you know, I'm going to have G-Rod on my shirt this week. And all our friends will be out here to kind of, you know, we'll be able to tell stories and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm really kind of playing with a heavy heart for him this week, being back in town and not being able to see him. So
I appreciate your thoughts on that, Pat. That is tough. So last thought, when you consider where you were physically after the torn labrum, you know how the tour goes, man. Nothing is guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed. You got to keep grinding and keep producing or you're gone. Looking at that, how much pride do you take in the fact that year in and year out, man, you're still here?
No, I
can't
believe it. Yeah, I'm not the guy that's supposed to be out here every year. You know, I was supposed to be, when I got kicked off the ASU team, I was supposed to be a garbage man. So I think I've done pretty well compared to a lot of the guys that were supposed to be tour stars. And, you know, I'm a grinder. I grind it out. I know what I want. You know, I got to work a lot harder than some of these guys. You know, Justin Thomas, Tiger Woods, these guys, you know, don't get me wrong, they work hard, but they have a lot of talent, a lot of gift. My game's not really that way. I got to work hard to kind of fight with these guys. So, you know, I love it. I look back and I think, man, this is my 18th year in a row. I can't believe. I would have never dreamed that this would all have been my way, you know, coming up on 43 years old. But I don't take it for granted. I love it. You know, I've got a lot of, you know, great comments from people out there and, you know, support and all that kind of thing. I never thought that would happen. I just, you know, thank everybody that's been in my circle and everybody that's, you know, supported me forever.
Yeah, Pat, I'll be straight. This is a great conversation. This is a great conversation, but not as good as the one you and I had on my pod because you could do you and be you. Did you get any reaction from the clones, from my listeners? What did they say? Because I don't think all of them knew who you were, what you were about, and they do now.
They do. It was awesome. I got great response from a lot of people that listened to your show. It was cool. I had some people that never heard of me. I had some people that had heard of me, but you know they don't realize that that's just the way I am. I'm just a normal guy. I happen to be able to play golf for a living. You know, I can make some money doing it. But I'm a normal guy. I'm like everybody else. I'm a dad now. I don't sleep anymore. You know, I like to drink. I like to hang out with my friends. I like to party. You know. I'm just like everybody else. I just kind of let my hair down a little bit more, kind of literally. But you know, I let my hair down a little bit more than most.
Pat, you're a normal guy, but you're an extraordinary bleep talker. All right?
Yes.
Let's be straight about that. So your show, really quickly, when is your radio show on? Where do they find it?
Tuesday nights, Sirius XM, Channel 92, 8 p.m. to 10 Eastern on Tuesday nights. It's on live. Call in. Anybody call in. We got all kinds of topics we bring up. It's called out of bounds because we get so far off topic of golf that.
Give me an example. How far out of bounds?
It could be anything. I mean, we have guys calling in, you know, well, remember the Tiger pictures and all that kind of stuff?
Sure.
We had people go so far off the deep end with these chicks and what they thought about Lindsay and all this. I'm like, guys, you know, this is, we got to kind of try to get back to the rough over here, okay? If we can a little bit.
Why, man? Play out of bounds.
We did, though, but that's what we do. That's what people love about our show is we'll get on a topic and we can stay on there for 2 hours, but we get all kinds of people to call in because it's not just about, oh, did you see him make that putt? You know, I don't care about the putt, okay? I really don't care about even talking about golf, but, you know, we get some of that and we get some of the other. So
the show's great until golf comes up.
Yeah.
Well, why does golf keep getting in the way of your program?
Well, the number one thing is people always want to talk about Tiger. That's the number one thing that every Tuesday we get more people calling it about Tiger, which I get. Don't get me wrong.
I was going to say, Pat, so where do you come out on that? Last thought, where do you come out on that? Because you're the first guy to say this. You know he has made so many guys so much money and brought so many eyeballs to it. I know you respect that. I know you appreciate
that.
Everybody
does.
But if that's all they want to talk about, does it get old?
Nah, it does a little bit, you know, because there's so many young players that we could talk about now, you know, and – you know, talking about Tiger is like talking about, you know, the sun being up in San Diego. It's all the time. You know, it happens all the time. You know it's fantastic. You know it's going to be great. I mean, everybody knows, you know, that they should thank Tiger for being born and you know, they should. I mean, all of us out here, we would never have this kind of money to play for and all these things that came our way if it wasn't for that guy. And just thank God I happen to be the same age of him, you know, so I could reap the benefits. I said that, but
And you beat him by 8 strokes.
Yeah.
As a senior in high school.
The one time.
They can't take that from you.
The 26-year anniversary. But, you know.
How did you celebrate the 25th anniversary of that beatdown? Gold? Is that silver? Is that tequila? What is that?
I don't know. It's always screwdrivers. Always the same. I'm on this 44 North kick.
Tell me.
So it's 44 North Huckleberry Vodka, and I mix it with Sunny D. And it's like drinking Kool-Aid. It's nothing. The problem is you can go through a bottle and not even know it. Then all of a sudden, about 5 minutes, you know it.
I remember the first time I went to New Orleans, and I went to Patty O'Brien's.
They
were selling the Hurricanes, and I'm like, this thing's a joke. What's all the hype? Yeah. You have one, I'll take another one. It's just Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And then you're in a gutter.
You lay it down, and you're in a hurricane.
Right.
You got to call them the spins, the tornado.
He was an NCAA champion at Arizona State, a 2 top 10 or in 5 tournaments since October. Pat Perez joining us here on location. Pat, I appreciate you. The podcast was absolutely amazing. This was a blast, too.
Let's do another one.
Much. Let's do it again.
Let's do the podcast. Boys are ready.
You got it, Pat. Good seeing you, man. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
Pat freaking Perez, if you need him. And he's back home. We are live at Torrey Pines. We're here for the Farmers Insurance. We will take a short time out. I've got an open segment next, so if there's something you want to hit on, it is toll-free. You know this. 1-800-636-8686. And I've got Rex Hoggard coming up. Appreciate you, Pat. You're the best. Clones. Peloton is a game-changing. I'm just doing business, Pat. It's cool. It's great, right? You like your Peloton. See you, Pat. I'm starting my Peloton read, and he goes, I got one. I'm like, you like that? He goes, it's a great clothes rack. Bro, if you use it, it's a great product, too. He's just using it differently. Me, when I use my Peloton, I ride it because it's a game-changing indoor cycling bike, which brings the energy of live studio classes right to your home. Anytime you want, winter or summer, rain or shine, with the Peloton, it's always the perfect weather to sweat. And with up to 14 live rides a day and over 10,000 more on demand, nothing will get between you and your workout. Peloton features live cycling classes. They stream right to your home every day, featuring real-time motivation from world-class instructors. So whether it's a monthly challenge or you're trying to meet your goals, maybe it's a training program for your next race, or you just want to set a new personal best, the Peloton bike will make you want to show up and keep climbing the live leaderboard year-round. Peloton members are riding their bikes more and more on average, and they're crushing their PRs along the way. You can learn more about the Peloton by going to onepeloton.com. That's onepeloton.com, or visit a local showroom, onepeloton.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. We are live at Torrey Pines. What an unbelievable place. What an amazing track. We're here for the Farmers Insurance Open. And if it sounds like I'm having a great day and a great time, it's because I am. Perfect day, perfect track, big-time golf guest. This guy nailed it. Tyler Stoop tweets, War San Diego Golf. Love Romy going live at Torrey Pines with some San Diego heavyweights. Might have to go up the coast to catch the last hour live. Jeff and Raleigh hit me up before the Pat Perez interview. He said, quote, you better let Pat Perez know up front, this is not another podcast recording. War skirt steak. Pat, yeah, I'm not telling that story. If you want that story, go to my podcast. We can't do that on terrestrial radio. In fact, he sat down. He said, now, wait, is this the podcast again or is this the show? I said, no, bro, this is the show. We cannot do what we did on the podcast. And he was great. Pat knows. Pat knew the room. I just want to make sure that he knew the room. Daniel Wheatley tweets, another great convo with Pat Perez. The man has a newborn, he isn't sleeping, and you're surprised his Peloton is a hanger? It's a good point, but I'm telling you, man, if you're going to have that Peloton, use it. It's a game changer. It's a life changer. It's an amazing product. Also, something that went down yesterday, we had a podcast with Maury Povich. This week's pod dropped yesterday with Maury, and he's getting a ton of positive reaction. This email says, Rome, while visiting friends in Denver a few years back, I had a little time in the morning before I had to head to the airport to catch my return flight. I caught Maury on the TV, and I had to know if he was the father. After almost 3 hours of back-to-back episodes, I missed my flight home, and I had to buy a one-way back to Wisco. I absolutely loved the pod with Maury. I'm constantly being ridiculed by my girlfriend because of my fascination with his show, and your pod only intensified my appreciation and interest in the man. Total class, great conversation. War Spotted Cow, War the Pod, unwore the nearly 20 inches of snow that we've gotten over the last few days. Mike and Wisco, so glad you heard that. Maury Povich came on, and of course we talked about that. He said it himself. He's on record with this, but he says, I know that I'm going to be known for two things. I will always be remembered for two things. The first being, you are not the father. Andrew, and the second being, you are the father. Maury and I covered that on the podcast, Alvy. Here's a taste from yesterday's conversation.
I have to say that the themes of the paternity test and the lie detector test, once we started, it kick-started the show. It got our numbers higher. But what happened the first time when my producer back then suggested it, I'm there, and I'm being debriefed on the first lie detector show and the paternity show. And so I'm going over the story. I'm learning about the guests and everything. And the producer is about to tell me, you know, and the result is, and I said, you know, I don't want to know anything more than my guests know, than my live audience knows, or my audience at home knows. Why would I want to know more than they do? Because if I did, then I would ask questions because I knew the answers. So I would skew the questions. It goes back to what I believe a talk show host should be, and that is an extension of the audience. So I want to ask the questions that the audience would ask. I want to be able to react the way the audience reacts. So when I give that answer, and that's when the whole inflection of, you know, you are the father or you are not the father. Guess what? I'm as surprised as the people who are watching the show.
I also followed him up with that, and I said, hey, Maury, what's it like when a guy finds out he's not the father and he's celebrating on stage nationwide like he's got the game-winning touchdown pass in the Super Bowl? Where do you come out on that? And if you want to hear his answer, I said to him, do you understand where a guy like that might be that geeked, or is it just bad form? Because what about the kid? What about the mother? And he answered that question in a really thoughtful way, too. So if you're one of those people who's constantly like, yeah, Rome, I hear you talking about the pod. I haven't gotten around to it, or I don't know how to do it. This is the one where you want to start. Maury Povich. Great conversation. I dropped it yesterday. It's up right now. All right, we are coming to you live from Torrey Pines. We are here for the Farmers Insurance Attorney. And we're halfway through it. When we come back, one of the famous Rexes is going to join me right here on location for the Farmers Insurance Open. Rex Hoggard joins me next. In hour number three, Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith will stop by as well. Telephone number is toll free, 1-800-636-8686. Time now for a bottom of the hour sports update. Here's the very latest.
Live from Torrey Pines Golf Course in San Diego, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
That is true. We are live at Torrey Pines. We are here for the Farmers Insurance Open in San Diego. Broadcasting live, and I'm trying to get as many interesting interviews as I possibly can, running down a lot of people that ordinarily we would not see and can do so in person, including my next guest. He is a Golf Channel senior writer, a co-host of Morning Drive, and very importantly, Rex number 7. Rex Hoggard is my guest. Rex, after all these years, we finally come together. We do it in person. It is so good to see you. How are you?
I got to be honest with you. Looking forward to this so much for the last week ever since I heard about it. And then I walk up and I see Pat Perez walking away. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going on after Pat Perez.
That's a tough act to follow, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What's your take on Pat? And in terms of a sport that usually does not have that kind of personality, that kind of swagger, anything about Pat Perez?
What amazes me about him, and he was on the telecast for the match last year in Vegas, and I was really curious to see how that was going to work out. Because he is outspoken. I mean, he's on a sodium pentothal drip. He doesn't have an unspoken thought. And you sit and you watch, and I listen to him. And actually, we talked about Tony Romo, how good he is in the booth. I think Pat is just as good when it comes to golf because he sees things that other announcers don't and other announcers won't talk about. And he was awesome at it.
He is awesome. He's an amazing personality. And I just had to remind him that he has a show on Satellite where he does his best Pat impression. He came on my podcast and absolutely tore it up. And I just wanted to remind him, this is a different room. And he was fine. He was great. He's had to make sure that he knew where he was. Now, you've been a staple on this program over the years. Great to sit down. How's your life? How are things? How's the family? What's going on?
Everybody's good. Yeah, you and I were just talking. I'm glad my youngest son, he's 14. He's playing high school golf. And so he was excited about that. And that kind of came out of nowhere, which... So for a golfer, you don't want to, I never want to force my kids into it. And so it was so much fun because now I got someone to go to the range with. I don't have to make excuses to go play golf. And so everyone's good. It's going to be a busy year. 2 weeks in Hawaii to start the year, then you're back here. So it's going to be a different year on the PGA Tour, a lot of 2-3 week stretches. But it's going to be compact, and I think the fans are going to like it better.
Rex, number 7, joining us. All right, so I had Tony Finau on in the first hour. He's part of that group with Xander and Tiger. What do you make of that trio?
It's going to be entertaining. I mean, it's kind of the future of golf. My guess is Tiger lobbied for that, to be quite frank with you, because President's Cup captain this year, you got to think he's a Ryder Cup captain very, very soon in the future. And these are the guys that are going to be on his team. And he knows them. He got to know Tony, obviously, last year at the Ryder Cup a little bit better. But it'll give him an opportunity to see exactly what they can do and where their game is at right now. And The interesting thing is, after following Tiger now for 2 days out here, he's not going to be, you know, both those guys are bombers. They're part of the new generation. And he's not going to be drawn into some sort of long drive contest. And in a weird way, I think it's actually going to help him, because he's just going to realize, yeah, I'm not in that league. I'm going to play my game.
What a weird thought, right? I mean, you're right, but what a strange thing to say when you think about that, that he's not going to get drawn into a long bombing contest, Tiger.
I don't know that he ever did, but certainly at this stage in his life, at this stage in his career, after 4 back surgeries, he's not going to go out and start to try to do things that he just can't do. And I don't want to make it sound like he's plenty long enough off the tee. He's not in that category.
Hey, listen, it's like any other athlete. As you get older, you make adjustments in your game, what you can and can't do, and you find other ways to get it done. You mentioned the Ryder Cup. In your opinion, what makes a good Ryder Cup captain, and how do you think he would do with that job?
I had this conversation just a few weeks ago with some European players when they named Padraig Harrington their captain for the next time around. And I thought Paul Casey had the best answer. And he goes, the captain is what that team needs. And by that, he meant that Thomas Bjorn, the European captain the last time around, he wasn't the same person as a captain as he had been for all those years as a player. Normally he was outspoken and kind of loud and kind of their version of Pat Perez we were just talking about. But as a captain, that team didn't need that. That team just needed someone to sit back and make sure all the pieces were in place and let them go out and play. And I think a good captain is what his team needs. And in this particular case, I think no one knows that better than Tiger Woods.
Rex Hager joining us here on location. Now, I had Xander on the show 2 weeks ago, and we talked about the career that he's had. He's part of that great class of 2011 that had one monster after another. What do you make of the class of players, that class, and how do you explain their success that they're having so early in their career?
I think we're going to continue to see that for all the reasons that Justin and Jordan and now Xander and all the rest of them have talked about. It's because when you come out on tour now, it's a conversation we had a few weeks ago with the Sony, when a guy like Stuart Sink joined the tour, all the great players were the older guys, whereas now it's completely flipped. The vast majority of great players are younger guys, and I think that's because of what they do now in junior golf and high school golf and college golf. They play better courses, they're better conditioned, they have swing coaches, they have all the equipment they need. So when they show up on tour, they don't need to make any adjustments, maybe like guys had to do back in the Tiger Woods era.
You know, it's funny, Rex, like, I don't want to get drawn into this. I don't want to get sucked into it's only Tiger, because it's not only about Tiger. There's so many great players on tour and so many great personalities, but it's hard not to get sucked into it. So let me ask you, what kind of a schedule do you expect him to play this year, and do you think he's got a major in him still?
I do think he has a major. Now, everything has to fall into place, as we saw last year. I mean, he put himself right in the hunt at the Open and the PGA, and there's always going to be a guy that challenges you. On those 2 weeks, Brooks Koepka wasn't going to be beat at the PGA Championship. But if you look at where his game's at right now, and I think at the way he's going to do his schedule, he's always very secretive, but I think he gave a little bit away. He was asked about Phil not playing this week, and he said, look, everybody's going to have to make adjustments, including himself, Tiger. And I think what we're going to end up seeing is not nearly as many events as last year. You're not going to see those 2-, 3-, 4-week runs like he had specifically at the end of the season, because everything now is going to be geared towards those majors. It was great winning the Tour Championship. It was a seminal moment in his career, but he still thinks number 15 is out there for him.
So what do you think other golfers in the field think about Tiger and where he is right now? What would they say?
For so long, it was a curiosity, especially for the younger players. They didn't know it. They'd never seen that guy at his best. And I think Eastlake was an eye-opening experience for everyone, but more so for the players, because now all of a sudden they saw what he does when he's at his best, which is play prevent defense. And that's what he did at Eastlake. He made them come after him. And I think it was a good learning experience. And it's funny, you know, that you asked for this. If Ernie Els was sitting here and he heard a younger player say, yeah, I want to play Tiger at his best, Ernie would laugh. No, you don't. You don't want
right.
that.
They don't know what they're saying.
Exactly. And I think what you're going to end up with is these younger players get more and more of a taste of this. I don't know that that Tiger aura ever comes back where he intimidates guys just standing on the first tee. But I think if he continues at this pace, we'll see what guys start keeping an eye on the leaderboard at the very least.
Rex 7, Rex Hager joining us, breaking it all down. One guy we have not talked about yet is Jordan Spieth. Now, he missed the cut at the Sony in Hawaii, and while he said it was a learning experience, he also said, quote, I'm tired of learning experiences, end quote. What do you make of the way he looked in Hawaii?
He did not look happy, and I think I saw someone on Twitter say it best that George's not very good at looking happy when he's not playing well on the golf course.
That's a great line.
And that's the honest-to-God truth. And, look, we want to fixate on the putting, and everyone is kind of taking their opinions on whether if he had the yips or not. I do not think so. He led the field on Friday in strokes gained putting. Guys with yips don't do that. However, having followed him for those 2 rounds, having followed him yesterday when he played with Tiger, his iron game's off. It's going to take a little while, but it always boils down to the putting. That's how he was able to do what he did for all those years, and he's going to have to find a way to make those 10-footers automatic again like they were.
So if you had to guess, do you think it's how much of it's technical and then how much of it's mental?
I don't think it's technical. I don't think it's ever technical when it comes to Jordan Spieth. I mean, you can't explain what he was able to do for all that time on the greens with technical things. You can't sit there and say these are the things you need to do. I think he needs to get back to feeling that freedom again and just looking at the lines. I think Ben Crenshaw said it best. When he was putting his best, he actually saw train tracks and could smell the smoke of the train.
Well, that's incredible.
Yeah, right. And it was. I think the great putters are all about feel. I mean, look, Tiger tinkers with his putting all the time, but it's still the same stroke that it was back in 1997.
Yeah, the whole yips thing is like so taboo, right? Guys don't even want to talk about it. But like, can you even explain it? Like, how do you fall into it, and then how do you get out of it?
You can't be loose with that word, and I think we've gotten a little too loose with it, to be honest with you. And you've seen guys
explain what you mean by that.
Well,
how are we too loose with it?
Well, I don't think. And well, in Jordan's case, I would say that maybe we're a little too loose with that. And I saw it even with Tiger Woods. There was a time when everyone seemed to think he had the yips with his chipping.
Chip yips.
And I don't think you come out of that. I've seen too many players not come out of that to say that, oh, well, he had him for this 12-month period, and now he's better on the other side. I don't buy that. I think maybe he struggled with his technique at that point of time, which I think probably Jordan's struggling right now with his technique, because there's no way you can have the yips. I've seen it ruin too many guys' careers.
All right, so one of the rule changes this year is guys are allowed to putt with the flag stick in. From a purely visual standpoint, what's it like seeing guys putting with the stick in? Are you used to that yet?
It's not a good look.
It's not, right?
No, it's not a good look. And the best,
at all.
And the best was Adam Scott, because he said in Hawaii when we asked him about it, and he said every putty's going to putt with the flag in. And we said, well, what about an 8-footer on the 72nd green at the Masters?
Right.
And he goes, look, I've done things unconventional. I don't care how they look if I think it's going to let me win. What I'm going to find fascinating is the USGA and the RNA did this for pace of play. That's it. And for you and I, if we go out, if we leave the flag stick in, we are going to pick up a little bit of time. It is easier. I've done it. It speeds up play. For these guys, you have Bryson DeChambeau and Adam Scott and others who have seen it as a competitive advantage. And that's not what the rulemakers intended at all. And I think if we get to the end of this season and Bryson DeChambeau has kept it in on every putt and he's leading the tour in strokes, game putting, I think then they're going to take a closer look at it, regardless of the optics. No, it doesn't look great. They did not intend this to be a competitive advantage.
But will there be guys who leave it in no matter what?
Bryson did. I mean, he did for the first 2 weeks of the season. And it creates an awkward situation when you have one guy who's
right.
paired with Dustin Johnson, and he wants it out, and one guy wants it in. And it's kind of awkward. It doesn't look good. There's going to be times, again, if the guy leaves it in on the 18th hole at Augusta, then we're going to have some problems.
Rex Harder joining us. It's a weird, weird look. All right, so also the knee height drop rule. What do you make of that so far, and what do the players make of that rule?
Again, not a good look to see a guy curtsying. I mean, we can't come up with a good idea. It's funny, I was jokingly saying to guys, I can't show you visually, but it's kind of like a proposal. It's sort of how the USGA wants you to do it, where you go down on one knee. And I told a couple of guys that, and they're just shaking their heads. And the problem's going to be is, and we've already seen it the first 3 weeks of the season, guys are so accustomed to going to shoulder height that it's immediately, that's where they're going to go to. And you're going to end up redropping, and it's going to create issues. Now, 6 months from now, we're probably not talking about it, but I've seen some ugly drops, and it again, not a good look.
Rex Hoggard is my guest. Rex, aside from Tiger and Spieth, what are some of the other storylines that you're interested in seeing and how they play out this year?
Well, Jason Day, I mean, the defending champion here, he spoke with the media yesterday. I mean, he certainly has all the tools in place. We've seen him get to #1 in the world. We've seen him win majors. And as well as he putts, he really broke it down during the offseason of what he needed to get better at, and that was his iron play. And he said yesterday if he can hit 70% of his greens in regulation for the season, he feels like he can get back to that dominant time frame. And I just don't know. This will be a good week for him because it's a challenging golf course, and you do have to control your golf ball. And as you get further into the, you know, into the regular season, but again, the competition is so hard now. He's going to have to do better.
All right, so we'll see this week, and we'll have a better idea. But how close do you think he is to being that guy who's right in the hunt for every major the way he used to be?
I think at that level, he's very close. And again, this is just a matter of percentages. Last year, he hit 65.2% of his fairways. This year, if he hits 70, he feels like he can be dominant. So the difference between 12th in the world and 1st in the world is 5 percentage points. I mean, if you want to break it down that way. I mean, it is a very finite amount of time. But again, you have so many players, Justin Rose and Dustin Johnson, all of these players that you need to contend with. I think it's going to be hard for anyone to be that dominant for a prolonged period of time.
All right, so who do you like this week?
John Rahm actually is a name that keeps cropping up. I mean, he obviously he's won here before. He seems to do all the things you need to do well in this golf course, particularly off the tee. I mean, and he's bold. You see it. We just talked about the younger players. He has no fear whatsoever. When it comes, he doesn't see rough or bunkers or water hazards or whatever the case may be. He just wants to hit the driver as hard as he can, and that's a good combination here.
You know, he was on the show recently for the first time, Rex. I'd never spoken to him before. I could not be more impressed. I mean, watching him from afar, obviously I've got great respect for his game. But for him to come here and then go to college the way he learn a second language and deal with everything he's dealt with, I could not be more impressed with him as a guy and a player. You?
He's an amazing athlete, first and foremost. I think he could have probably played any sport. But he told a story last year in December about pulling Tiger Woods in Sunday singles, and we were just talking about this, and everyone wanted it, and then his name came up, and he said, I didn't sleep that night. I was so nervous. And Thomas Bjorn, going back to the captain, he kind of put it as simple as he could. And it's, look, you just need to go out and play as well as you can. Forget about who's on the other side. Don't try to compete with him. Just try to beat the golf course.
Rex Hoggard, right on cue. Rex number 7 joining me in person. Rex, I appreciate you, all the interviews over the years, and so glad you and I can come together in person. Really good to see you. Thank you.
Pleasure to get to meet you. Thank you so much, man.
You too. Golf Channel senior writer and the co-host of Morning Drive. He is Rex number 7. Rex Hoggard, we come back with a third and final hour. We are live at Torrey Pines. Phone lines are open. Phone calls next.